Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly Extra.
Special Big Freeze Edition. Yep, old man winter's come a-calling and he's brought with him a blanket of snow. We ask, what will it all mean for the Premier League? Is the Big Freeze like the Big Four, but without Liverpool? And what about the weekend? Will it feature more orange balls than Debbie does Dundee? Elsewhere, there's the African Cup of Nations, still set to go ahead despite the wintry conditions. A big midweek round of action in Italy, in Football Weekly Extra. Right, well, joining us today, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hello, Barry. Happy New Year to you, John Ashton.
Thank you very much.
And Fruce News to you, Raphael Honigstein.
Kind of, yeah.
What did I just say?
I don't know. Oh. But I think what you were meant to say was Frohes Neues.
Frohes Neues.
But happy New Year to you.
Right, well. It sounds like a Berlin avant-garde rock, you know, and Frohes Neues. No, it doesn't. You're right. It doesn't sound like Happy New Year either when I say it. But Happy New Year to you listeners in Germany and a country, of course, which is well equipped to deal with minor fluctuations in wintry weather, unlike some other ones that we could mention. Formica Atomica posting in after the raft of cooled off fixtures saying, what are you guys going to talk about? Please don't cancel the pod. Will James have it all to himself to talk about Serie A? Sounds good. Barry?
Wouldn't make a change.
Well, I suppose we could talk about the fact that the UK is so ill-equipped to cope with not a great deal of snow. People in other countries must be laughing at us.
Well, the Premier League, Barry, the Emirates, for example, on Wednesday night, one of the world's most modern and well-equipped stadiums, and yet they weren't able to entertain all the Bolton fans who travelled south with Arsenal Bolton.
I know, it's a disgrace, I think, because it's not as if the conditions here are arctic. There's only been a couple of inches of snow, and yet the stadium at the Emirates, they weren't able to guarantee the safety of the fans.
But the ground itself was safe. It was the area outside that they said was there, which suggests it would have been better to go ahead with the game because the safest place for the fans was inside the stadium, presumably.
They can't be airlifted into the ground, though, from by helicopter. They need to get there. And I think that's part of the problem with Arsenal is that I think it's something like 70% of fans arrive at the ground by public transport, which is obviously badly hit by the weather,
right.
Which perhaps somewhere like Stoke on Tuesday night was not so badly affected, partly because it's away from the city centre. It's slightly away from the city centre. It's a new ground, so all the roads around it have been gritted.
It's not just abroad, is it, though? Because back in the day, we used to be able to have games in the snow. John, you were pointing out a marvellous clip.
Oh, yeah, there's a fantastic thing on our YouTube roundup this week, just to sort of post-pollinate the website, of a game between Glentoran and Linfield. Are they Northern Irish, bro?
Yeah.
In about 95, Boxing Day, when they've got a completely white pitch and they've just cleared away the lines, basically. So it's almost like an inverted pitch. The lines are green and the pitch is white. And at half time, they managed to lose the orange ball.
I think it got burst.
Is that what? They
had to play with a white ball. I know you've got your hand up, but this is really funny. You should watch it.
And yeah, if you've seen the clip, it's like the second half is like they're pretending to play football because you simply can't see the ball. It's really quite. There's almost a punch up at some point because the players are just kicking each other because I don't think they can even see the ball. It's great stuff.
Yeah, on a slightly more technical note, unfortunately, I think The irony here is that at Highbury the game would have probably happened because there are no concourses, there are no steps. You just went straight in from the street. And I think the real problem and the real sort of thing that nobody talks about and why the clubs are so afraid of these situations is there is a chance that 10,000 people will slip outside the ground and all sue Arsenal. And it is on Arsenal property. That is the real problem. That's why they call off these games.
Do you think there's also a chance that 10,000 people won't turn up and so it's kind of in the club's interest to call off these games?
No, I don't
really
think
bad.
It is. It'll cost them a lot more to call off a game with all the people already there preparing all the executive boxes, etc. And then they'll have to come again and throw all this food away and the champagne has to be recorked. And
they have the tickets are sold already anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Someone pointed out in today's paper that Arsenal based their attendance figures on tickets sold, not actual attendance, so that if the match last night had gone ahead and say 15,000 people had decided to stay at home beside the fire instead, their attendance would have been in 60 to 70,000, whereas there might have only been quite obviously 20,000 people there.
Right, all clubs do that, pretty sweet.
tells me. It's
I wasn't aware of that.
No, neither was I. Producer Pete was, though, crucially.
But surely attendance is attendance.
Yeah.
And completely different
right.
to tickets sold.
Yeah, you're absolutely so spot on.
They're massaging the numbers.
Exactly.
It's not on.
Stoke
it used to be the other round,
what?
Of course, that the clubs would say, oh, only 15,000 turned up. Sorry, we can't pay you all these, can't pay the revenue, all this income these days.
Do we judge our podcast listening figures on how many people download it rather than how many people listen to it?
Of course.
That's also true.
We used to have a thing in Ireland where there'd be, say, outside the county hurling or Gaelic football final, there'd be lads taking the money and handing out tickets, you know, taking cash at the gates, putting it in the bag, and an awful lot of them would be pocketing large amounts of the money they were collecting, so that the official attendance would be about 3,000. But if you looked at the pitch, there were quite obviously up to 30,000 people there.
Wow.
So,
Stoke Fulham, Barry.
Yes.
The game that went ahead on Tuesday. Cracking match, no?
It was a fantastic game. Fulham were 3-0 down, having not conceded three goals in any game so far this season. They were 3-0 down after, I think, 36 minutes. They started better and sort of bossed Stoke about for the first 10 minutes. And then Stoke got three goals in quick succession. I think we're all three of them. Two of them from set pieces. And the third, a good opportunist goal with a spectacular bit of thinking outside the box and indeed outside the pitch from Danny Higginbotham, who ran around off the sideline and back in again to pick up a cross, nodded down to Mamadi CDB, and he scored. Mm. And then Fulham came back into it in the second half. And
cracking goal from Clint Dempsey, eh?
Yeah, Clint Dempsey came on. I think Roy Hodgson doesn't make many mistakes, but he made a mistake by not starting him. He only came on...
Why didn't he start him?
I don't know, but he came on for Bobby Zamora when Zamora was brought down by Abdoulaye Faye and broke or dislocated his collarbone. So
8 weeks.
Yeah, which I'm surprised by. And apparently his injury is he's dislocated his collarbone, which rather than broken it, which wasn't an injury I even knew you could suffer from. But Dempsey came on, scored a contender for goal of the season, and probably should have scored two more and made another. So he was only on the pitch for 30 minutes and was put in a nearly faultless performance.
There you go, Fulham. You got plenty of airtime this week. And tell you what, weather permitting, there are some intriguing games this weekend. Are they likely to go ahead, or is this kind of icy stadium approaches factor going to weigh in?
I think the Sunday games might be in trouble, from what I've heard.
Because of the big flurries.
Because it's going to come again Sunday morning with snow.
Right.
it should be okay.
All right. When are the games? Because I've got a couple of games just highlighted here to talk about. Liverpool Spurs. That's, I think, on the Saturday. Is that right? Searching for confirmation.
No, I think it's on Sunday.
Is that on Sunday? Well, it'd be a shame if that doesn't go ahead because it looks really intriguing. Of course, Liverpool battling to get back into top four contention. They're only 4 points off it, but the team that's currently occupying fourth spot is Spurs, who they're hosting. Spurs have a dreadful record at Anfield. What do you think?
Liverpool have won three of the last four in the league, I think. I mean, they were unimpressive against Reading at the weekend, which sort of brought back all those worries about how good they are. But if you look at the form table over the last eight games, Liverpool have picked up only one less point than Chelsea, Tottenham and Man City. And, you know, you don't really consider, you know, if you look back over, that's quite a big chunk of the season. And so they're not in too bad a form in the league. Robbie Keane going back. It's an interesting one, isn't it? It could be quite a pointer for the rest of the season for Liverpool.
If it takes place.
Goes ahead, yeah.
What about Birmingham Man United? Birmingham, eh? Talking about form, how many games unbeaten is it for them now?
Well, Birmingham are second in the form table at the moment. They've
Who's
won.
Top?
Chelsea are top in the form table.
Are they?
The form table. Well, my form table goes back six games.
Back eight games.
And how you've got Chelsea top as well?
No, Birmingham are top.
Birmingham are top games, over eight games, right?
And they're only eighth.
Right, but they're taking on a Man United side who have been stuttering amid a welter of it's all over for Man United articles. Blues are undefeated in their last 11 league games, it says here. But they haven't beaten United since a 5-1 thrashing in 1978. Good Lord. Any chance of turning that around, Raphael Honigstein?
I'm not sure. I think they'll play their usual style, which is try not to attack at all. against the bigger sides, and it very often works. I saw them a while back at the Emirates, and they were just incredibly negative and defensive, but they nearly snatched a draw. And I think since then they've just been better, become better at doing that very same thing. Plus, really, when you look at them individually, they are collectively really overachieving and fulfilling more than their true potential, I think. I mean, McLeish is just doing a fantastic job with the players he's had. I don't think any of us would have looked at this at a squad before the start of the season would had them at, what are they, six at the moment? Halfway through the season, it's just
they're
unbelievable.
They're in eighth place, but they're only five points off a Champions League spot, and they have a certain amount of momentum behind them, not least because Carson Young's come in, and whilst there is a certain amount of uncertainty about players he might bring in, there is the feeling of a club going forward, and in those 11 games they've gone unbeaten, they have taken on teams like Chelsea and emerged with points.
Well, Manchester United should win this game, but the way they've been playing this season, there's absolutely no guarantee that they will. And you'd have to be a fool to sort of bet the mortgage on it or anything.
Right. Would you put money on Birmingham getting into Europe this season?
Probably not, no.
Really? Any reason why? Do you think they're going to fade long term or what?
That's just not something I'd be interested in putting money on.
Right. We shall see. They may transform their squad in the January transfer window, and thus their prospects. We shall see, assuming those games go ahead, and we'll be looking at more of the weekend's matches. Chelsea are going to be at Hull, Arsenal hosting Everton. Ooh, with added Landon Donovan.
Landy Cakes.
Yeah, or Mandon Donovan, as I believe he's now. Because he's a man now. He's not a Landy Cakes anymore.
Why is he a man?
Because he's beefed up and he's become a real leader out there.
All right.
Yeah, that's what they say. Anyway, we'll do
he
all of that.
He wasn't a real leader
three.
In the penalty shootout that cost LA Galaxy the MLS title.
Right. Okay.
Because he missed.
Did he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's why he came to England.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to take a quick pause now, after which we're going to be looking forward to, some would say, the biggest footballing event of this weekend, the start of the Africa Cup of Nations.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Africa Cup of Nations begins on Sunday. We're all prepared for our big preview. Barry's got a map of Africa, which he's currently holding the wrong way up, Barry. But it does look very impressive.
No, it's because you're sitting the other side of the table looking at it upside down. It's been an education for me, actually. I said before the pod, and you all laughed at me, but I'm not ashamed to admit it, that until about half an hour ago, I thought South Africa was a separate island state to the rest of Africa.
Right.
That's quite sad.
It is very sad.
As you probably just detected, amongst our preparations, we've wheeled in Brian Oliver, Africa Cup of Nations expert par excellence, to preview this upcoming tournament for us.
Hello.
Hi, Brian, and thank you for joining us. And so many interesting stories. Ivory Coast, will this be their year? Is it going to be one of the other big name contenders, or are we going to see a surprise, a Mali or somebody marching in to steal the honours? What do you think?
Well, I was listening to Barry talking about betting just back then, and as a keen investor, aware, of course, that the value of your investment can go down as well as up, I've put two separate bets on Mali.
Mali? Yeah. Why?
Because the odds are ridiculously high. 33 to 1 they were, but they're down to 20 to 1 now. And because you look at their midfield, and look at England's midfield, for example, all four of Mali's midfield players are still in the Champions League, and they play for Bordeaux, Juventus, Real Madrid and Barcelona. Which is pretty impressive in my view. They've got Freddy Kanute up front. Mm. The bloke who scored for Stoke the other day didn't even get in the squad today.
Right. Just as a minor point, Sissoko, who you're referring to from Juventus, they're now in the Europa League after some unfortunate.
Oh, you've done me there.
No, that's okay, but I mean, it's near.
Damn it. I can further do you by saying that Sidibe chose not to be in the squad. I think.
Well, I think actually there's a very interesting theme there. I think a few players have chosen not to go to this tournament.
Why would they have done that?
I think some deals have been done. I'm talking strictly off the record.
With
here,
clubs or with World Cup prospects?
Yeah, look at the Suleiman Tari incident. He's not going because he didn't say sorry for not turning up to a friendly in Angola in October. Well, Essien and Asamoah Gyan also didn't turn up to that game and did say sorry, and are going to the Nations Cup. Suleiman Tari didn't and is not. Well, there are two Tottenham players not going. Sidibe is not going. John Mensah of Sunderland is injured. John Pansil of Fulham is injured. I don't know. Do you believe that everybody's genuinely injured or have some deals been done? But to be honest, you can't play an African Nations Cup and a World Cup and a full season of football, and especially if you're in the later stages of European competition, and survive. You just can't do it. Because it isn't just playing in that tournament. It's when you come back again, you've got to reacclimatise. Look at the weather out here now and look at what the weather's like in Angola.
Absolutely. The question of the World Cup, meantime, does it help? In your opinion, is it a help or a hindrance to the teams that are going to be going on to the World Cup having this tournament in January?
Well, it could work either way, but I know somebody who's related to one of the Algeria players who has been saying that they're really, you know, they're definitely not prioritising the Cup of Nations. All they're worried about is playing England in the World Cup. So it wouldn't surprise me if Algeria didn't even get to the quarterfinals, and it wouldn't surprise me if some of the other World Cup teams, especially Ghana, have got only half a team there. I don't think they're going to be winning the Nations Cup.
But you sound slightly less excited about this edition than you would ordinarily be.
That's because I'm not there.
Oh, right, I see.
First time for seven tournaments that I haven't gone. Very sad, but it's $420 a night for a hotel, so I don't think quite a lot of people aren't going.
So, Brian, is your feeling then that all these teams who are not involved in the World Cup are going to be the teams who will take it seriously and try to win it, whereas those who are will have their eye on the World Cup and not be
involved?
Well,
it's only guesswork, isn't it? But I think Mali, Egypt, Tunisia will do well. But then there are others who have qualified. I think Cameroon probably will be pretty good.
1-0 to the Arsenal posting in, saying, Cameroon, personally, I think they look stronger than the Ivory Coast, with Carlos Kameni, one of the best goalkeepers from Africa. A midfield that will not even be able to start Landry Nguemo, sorry, great player from Celtic, apparently, and an attack with the tournament's all-time leading scorer, Samuel Eto'o.
Well, I have taken advice, of course, from Mr. Paul Doyle also, and he says Cameroon, and who am I to argue? So I think a side investment on Cameroon also.
Right, excellent.
See, well, a belter of a game teed up between the Ivory Coast and Ghana. They're in, I suppose, what passes for the group of death, because Togo, who aren't that much good, are also in it. But they're sort of near neighbours or next door neighbours, and one's managed by a Bosnian and the other's managed by a Serb. So there's all the recipe for all sorts of
What are the early matches we should be keeping an eye out for then, Brian?
Well, the opener, if everything's frozen off at the weekend, and I wouldn't be surprised if it is, then what could be better than to settle down at 7 o'clock on Sunday evening to watch Angola v Mali?
Right, okay, the hosts against
my hot tip. And of course, if my hot team lose that game, I've done my dough already.
Yeah, indeed. Excellent.
And what about Algeria, Egypt? They're still sort of killing them, each other, metaphorically speaking, aren't they?
They're not the best of friends, absolutely. They look at the draw. They're not going to meet each other early. And if my theory is true, they won't meet each other anyway because Algeria won't get through. But Egypt, interesting. They are very good. I thought they would beat Algeria, I have to say, in the playoff. And they'll be out to retain the cup. But again, their team is weakened. There are two or three big names and big bodies missing because Mido is so fat he didn't get in the squad again.
Really?
Mm.
He's been playing for a club in Egypt now.
Yeah, I think it's Zamalek, but I'm not sure. But he's still registered to Middlesbrough. He's always been a bit on the large side. And in fact, at the 2006 tournament, so large were his shorts that we called them the Tented Village.
What, just at certain times of the day or always?
No, every time he turned out, he had the most ridiculous, you know, he could have sailed around the world with his shorts.
Right, okay. Not going to ask about what would the mast be, but... Right, okay, well, the Africa Cup of Nations, fantastic stuff. And Bran, although you won't be there, hopefully you'll be following, and perhaps you can keep us up to date on it. We'll also have Jonathan Wilson there in Angola, and he'll be phoning it in as well, with some on-the-spot stuff.
Very shrewdly, I should say, Jonathan Wilson is not staying in the $420 a night hotels of Luanda, and he's moved out to one of the other groups to follow, I think, the Egypt group, I think. So you'll be getting some good information from him, I'm sure.
All right, excellent stuff. Brian, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Let's have one or two posts from those hundreds of thousands of listeners out there. Blunt Guardian says, question for Raphael Honigstein. Would Maurice Volz make it in Schalke's first team if he survives at Maggot's training camp? Maurice Volz, has he gone to Schalke?
Well, he's training with them. He hasn't, at the moment of recording of this pod, he hasn't signed the contract yet. I think he would be backup at the moment behind Rafinha, the Brazilian right back. But there is a suggestion that he might go, perhaps to Italy. So, with Rafinha, he won't be in the first 11. Without, he should be.
He might be. Is Volzi, might have been Blunt Guardian asking this question, not sure. But is Volzi really as popular in England as the German newspapers make us believe?
I'm perhaps the wrong person to
ask.
I think
he is.
He's got a fantastic blog. I don't know if he still updates it, but once upon a time when he was Fulham, he was doing it. It was brilliant. When he was writing sort of love notes to the Hoff and that sort of thing.
Yes. There used to be a channel called Sitanta, and I did a show on there, which for a season featured him as this kind of video diarist. And he did all sorts of stuff, flying around with the police in their helicopters and cooking underprivileged kids a German Christmas lunch, and crucially doing kind of semi-naked, sweaty yoga. That was one of my favourite installments.
Always goes down. I saw that one.
Yeah, did you? There you go, yeah.
He was on ESPN as a proper halftime pundit.
Oh, there you go. You see, a lot of these Satanta people did get picked up by ESPN.
Yes, I mean, the good ones were kept.
All of the big good ones, yeah.
John, sorry, I was about to call you. You are aware, James, that Jonathan Ross has quit the BBC, so you should get your CV in there quick sharp, because there's a radio show, a film show, and a chat show going.
Yeah. Interesting. Would it fit in with my other commitments?
I don't know. The pay is quite good.
6 million won't be enough for Jimbo.
Right. Well, speaking of big name talent shifting from one organisation to another, Roger Palmer posts in saying, what a kick in the pants this Owen Coyle thing must be for Celtic. I'll not leave when Celtic offer me the job, but if a real prestige club comes knocking, you'll not see me for this. We kind of made this point, I think, on Monday, but fair point. Roger, hope the goats are well. Goalies, lots of people posting in with suggestions of top goalies after we were discussing last week whether there was a kind of absence of a hot young replacement for the likes of Buffon and Oliver Kahn. People talking about Igor Akinfeev, of course, Hugo Lloris, Sergio Asenjo of Atletico Madrid, Julio Cesar, of course, who I think we're already a bit remiss not mentioning. Now, another goalkeeping topic on the post was Gigi Buffon, who came up in conversation. A lot of people posting him with questions. For Mika Atomica, isn't Buffon a Genoa fan? Is this true or not? He's only 31 as well. Dino's off eat your heart out. He is only 31, although the injuries are beginning to creep up with increasing regularity. But he is a Genoa fan, amongst other things. Somebody was saying, oh, he once wore a shirt with a fascist slogan on. This is true. It was among the many ill-advised things he did in his younger years at Parma. He had the number which is associated with the initials HH for Heil Hitler. So some people were suggesting that he was a closet fascist because he also wore this shirt with the slogan "Boyaki Molla," death to those who weaken, or which was a slogan from a fascist coup in a Calabrian town back in the 70s.
But he also wears a snood. So does that mean he's a closet homosexual?
I'm guessing not, because he's busy with his wife producing offspring. And that.
Right.
But it depends how big his closet is. But
this snood has now become incredibly popular amongst goalkeepers everywhere throughout Europe. So half the German Bundesliga keepers now wear it.
Right. But I think Buffon was just a gentleman who... sorry, John.
I was just saying, isn't a snood like a hood thing?
It's like a scarf without any ends, basically.
Hmm. Well, they're very popular. Amantina Mancini's always going.
It's a snood because it's a cross between a scarf and a hood.
So, interesting.
So snood could be sort of unrolled and put over your head.
Can it?
My first encounter with snoods was when Nick Kershaw used to wear them all the time.
Did he?
Yeah.
I thought that was actually a hood.
No, it was just a kind of a scarfy thing around his neck with no ends.
Did you interview Nick for Hot Press?
God, no. I was only a kid at that time when Nick Kershaw was around.
Right.
In his pomp.
In his pomp, indeed. Look behind you. There's the man you're chasing. That's my Nick Kershaw lyric for today. Be another one on Monday. Now,
you got it bad. You don't know how bad you got it.
That's the same song.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right.
Human racing. Rhymes with chasing.
Quite an apt song for this pod as well.
No, John. Now, I wanted to mention Buffon because lots of people had questions about
him. You wanted to mention Buffon because you're in love with him. You've been crushing him.
I think he's great.
You always want to mention him.
Yeah.
No matter what you're doing.
He falsified his school records.
I suspect at moments of extreme excitement with Mrs. Jimbo, you shout his name, not hers.
But I also want to mention little Luca Bucci, because some people were doubting my contention that he's shortest keeper in the history of short keepers. But he is tiny. Somebody posted in saying, wasn't he 6'1" or something? I really don't think so. The bloke's about my height, if not smaller. Coltrane 27. When I lived in Parma 2 years ago, Luca Bucci had come back into the team at the age of 38. This is true. Parma were so broke, they had to pick up Luca Bucci, who was the guy who was meant to be starting the day that Buffon came in and made his debut, whenever that was, in 95 against Milan at the age of 17. And he basically, his career never recovered from that because Buffon just took over. But Luca Bucci had been unemployed for 6 months and basically walked back into the side and did brilliantly, kept them up that year. Now, speaking of all things Italian, big midweek in Italy. Let's go over to our Serie A correspondent, Barry Glendening.
You were always accusing me of not caring what happens in Serie A, but I care deeply. Yesterday afternoon, Juve beat Parma 2-1.
That's correct. With 1.5 shots on goal, as the Gazzetta dello Sport put it this morning.
Oh, really?
Mm.
What does it explain?
Well, they just basically weren't very impressive, but they scored with one shot, and there was this kind of scuffed shot that there was a sort of own goalie type. I can't remember what it was. But they basically... It wasn't
after a corner.
Right, there you go.
And then off the top of my head, I can also tell you, Inter won, ground out another 1-0 win. Napoli beat Atlanta 2-0.
Yeah. And did you see Quagliarella's goal in that?
I haven't seen any of the
goals. Did you, Raphael?
No, I didn't. It wasn't...
Stonking. He turns, basically he's about 30 yards out, nobody near him, and he just turns and biffs it. This high curling ball into the top corner. There's nothing Coppola can do about it. They were playing Atlanta. That victory, that 2-0 win for Napoli, plus Roma's extraordinary result against Cagliari, means that Napoli have moved up into fourth place into the Champions League positions. What happened to Roma against Cagliari?
Well, Luca Toni's debut for Roma was somewhat overshadowed by the manner in which Roma collapsed at the end and let go a 2-0 lead.
They were leading 2-0 in the 89th minute.
And Cagliari scored 2 in injury time to get a point.
A Cagliari charge, as we used to say. Back in the day. And
it's quite sad.
Ooh, excellent. You watched lots of action, didn't you?
I did, yeah, because all three games were live. Inter, Juve, and...
On that shocking pitch
Milan.
At Chievo.
Yeah.
Yeah, they used sand, apparently, to stop it freezing. In Parma, they kept the game on, and they might like to think about this, the Emirates, with an eagle. Apparently, the covers, which are used to keep the pitch warm, you know, in a traditional way, are regularly being attacked by crows, who favour the area around Parma because it's a big farming community, who peck their way through the covers. So they have introduced a young eagle, and he keeps the crows away. And there you go.
Why do the crows peck their way through the covers?
Well, I think they think there's seed or something underneath.
All right.
I don't know why. I'm not a crow.
A crow psychologist. Well, they're not... Quite a few teams, we did a knowledge on it a while ago,
right.
Quite a few teams have animals that they use to, often it's to protect the pitch from...
At the Tardini, it's an eagle.
From seagulls and stuff. Yeah.
Anyway, now the interesting thing is that Juventus, who really weren't that impressed at beating Parma, but at least it ended their run of horrible results, are this weekend taking on Milan, who Sunday night at the San Siro welcomed back Didi David Beckham. Raphael, we both saw this game. What did you make of it?
He was quite good, I must say. He played a few trademark Hollywood balls, but they actually went to the addressees quite often. And Genoa looked
quite a lot as well. Didn't
he? Well, Genoa looked very good going forward, but in defence, they were just really hopeless.
Did you think they looked good going forward?
Well, I thought the first goal, they took the lead 1-0, and it was really well-crafted goal.
Right.
And they are a very attacking side. That's why I think they left far too much space for Milan. I mean, they had so much time on the ball, and that's why I think partially one of the reasons why Beckham looked very, very good, because he had a lot of time on the ball all the time. But Milan, very impressive.
Mm. Do you think Ambrosini learnt the Cruyff turn for Christmas?
Yeah.
He was doing it all over the pitch. It was working sometimes.
Well, he also got a good penalty.
Yeah.
I think he did that quite well. But he was at fault for the first goal, of course, because he didn't pick up the runner.
Just wanted to mention one more thing about Wednesday's Milan-Genoa 5-2. Marco Borriello, former Genoa player, because he went there on loan from Milan a couple of seasons ago, was the big star. It was a brilliant second goal. It was a sort of flying scissor kick thing. And Stoudhaven was wanting to know, why is he so underrated and why was he loaned out before? Well, there were two reasons, really. I think one was the fact that he'd just been serving a three-month suspension for testing positive in a dope test while at Milan. And I think as a result, they thought that he maybe didn't have the right kind of mentality. As I always like to mention, his defence for this positive dope test actually came from his girlfriend, who said, oh, well, I've been using an anti-STD cream and it must have rubbed off on his groin area and got absorbed into his blood. So thanks for that, girlfriend. They're no longer together, you'll be excited to know. But the other thing, I think, was that they just thought he wasn't going to fit into the Milan system, that whereas at Genoa he was brilliant and almost became top scorer that year, it was because the whole team was playing around him and playing to him and through him, that it wouldn't work that way at Milan. But he has proved them wrong now.
Isn't it weird that Patrick Vieira got a game?
Ah, Patrick
just
Vieira.
A few hours before moving. I mean, usually when you're about to sell a player or get rid of him or whatever, you don't play him just the day before for fear of him getting injured.
Why do you think they would have done that then?
Well, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me, because he could have easily picked up another hamstring or whatever and then the move would have fallen through. So I find it a bit strange.
Well, we'll talk more about Patrick Vieira in a second or two, because, of course, he's, I think, all but officially, or maybe even officially now, at Man City. And we'll be looking at what they'll be up to, weather permitting, and all the rest of the Premier League right after this.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
John, Michael the Bank Street Canary.
Well, I was just going to say my favourite club owned animal is Michael the Bank Street Canary, who was owned by Man United in their previous guise as Newton Heath back in the 1800s. And they advertised him in the programme as Michael the Bank Street Canary. You could, and fans could come and pay money and listen to him sing. Because they were, you know, fairly skint back in those days. But when fans had paid to get in to see this canary sing, they were sadly disappointed because they didn't have a canary and it was a goose. And the goose just used to honk.
I think the Glazers might warm to this idea, you know, to raise a few quid.
Maybe they could afford a real canary these days, I don't know.
Sure, that's extraordinary. And once the first set of fans had gone in and discovered this goose in the canary's guise, did they not tell the others?
Well, this is obviously in a pre-internet age, so there's nobody tweeting that they've just been just been done.
Did they hope that people wouldn't notice it wasn't a canary, or did they try to dress it up as a canary?
Perhaps in those days, canary was such an exotic animal that fans in Manchester just simply didn't know any better.
They had quite a bad record, Man United. A couple of mascots later, they got a goat called Billy the Goat as their mascot. And
was it necessary to call him Billy the Goat?
I think he was actually...
In case he was confused with anything.
Yeah, creatively called Billy the Goat. And then killed him through alcohol poisoning after, I think it was the 1909 Cup Final. He was part of the celebrations, and they kept giving him this poor goat champagne until the poor thing snuffed it.
My word, eh? Well, interesting. Let's just finish off today's pod by having a quick look through those weekend fixtures. Arsenal-Everton, Barry.
I'd say Arsenal win that one quite easily. It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see if Landon Donovan makes his debut and how he gets on. It'll be difficult for him to adapt and do well in England, seeing as he's only going to be here for such a short space of time, I think 10 weeks.
6-1 at Goodison it was, to the Gunners.
Yes, though Arsenal are going to be without Fabregas and Alex Song, who a few Arsenal watchers have said that he's been their best player this season. He's gone off to the Africa Cup of Nations. So it'll be interesting to see how, I think it's Danilson's earmarked to replace him. Interesting to see how he copes.
Indeed. So, Birmingham take on Man United. Burnley against Stoke. Who'll be the Burnley manager for that?
Well, there's some...
Steve Davis is the caretaker manager, the top snooker player.
Right.
Major nugget.
As a caretaker manager, will he be employing a sweeper system, do you think, or what? Fulham, meanwhile, are against Portsmouth.
Actually, can I just interrupt you there?
Yes.
I heard a nugget from a colleague, speaking of Steve Davis and nuggets, after Burnley's win over the MK Dons, a Burnley player who shall rename nameless, Andre Bique, was interviewed by some reporters, and he had no idea he'd just played a cup match, because he kept talking about the 3 points and how they needed the 3 points. It was great to win away from home, blah, blah, blah. And then when it was pointed out to him that they didn't get any points because it was an FA Cup match, he said, oh, well, it was tight, you know, and hopefully we'll be able to hold on for the second leg. And then when it was pointed out to him that there wouldn't be a second leg, he looked very confused and scuttled off to the team bus. But it just shows you how enthralled our, some of our foreign visitors are to the world's greatest cup competition, that they're able to play in it without even knowing.
Indeed. So Fulham, meanwhile, taking on Portsmouth. Pompey are threatening the integrity of football. I thought that was Sir Alex Ferguson. Right, anyway, the PFA, they missed their second self-imposed deadline to pay their players, and they may have to sell off all their stars, they were saying this morning.
What stars, exactly?
Well, exactly. We talked about this a bit on Monday. It does look bleak. Fulham should run away with this, do you think?
They should, because I would say Roy Hodgson's going to be quite angry with his players after the pretty abject performance they put in against Stoke. So they'll be on the rebound. Portsmouth are missing Dindan, Belhaj,
Yebda.
And Kanu, who are all gone off to the African Cup of Nations. They can't buy in anyone to replace them, and they're doomed, aren't they?
Mm. Hull hosting Chelsea. Chelsea haven't won away in the last three matches on the road, but they do have a terrific record at the KC Stadium. They, though, are another club hurt by absences for the Africa Cup of Nations, Raphael.
They are hurt, of course. The question is, will Anelka be fit again for this match? I think he might be. With him, I think they'll be okay. Without him, even though Sturridge obviously played very well against Watford, they are a bit weak up front, physically weak. And I think away to Hull, that will show. It's less of a problem, I think, at home where you have a lot of possession and you create a lot of chances. Away from home, where it's more about making the most of the few opportunities you do create, and you'd like somebody to hold up the ball a bit up front, I think they might struggle. With Anelka, as I said, I think they'll be okay.
Sunderland haven't won in their last eight games, and they are hosting Bolton. Will Owen Coyle be in charge?
We don't know. I think at the time of recording, he's still technically on gardening leave, and as Bolton and Burnley try to thrash out compensation, I'm sure he'll be at the game anyway. Whether he's in the dugout or not would be another matter. And it's a tricky one for Bolton. Sunderland they've been pretty poor recently, but they're quite good at home, and Bolton are quite bad away from home.
Wigan are hosting Aston Villa. Liverpool taking on Spurs. We talked about West Ham Wolves. That's on Sunday.
That's a huge game.
West Ham Wolves. Yeah.
I mean, there's only a point between them in the table. One's 17th, v 15th. And you'd have to say if West Ham lose that, and there's every possibility they will lose that, they're in huge trouble.
Sage nods all round.
I just think I think Bolton have done everybody else at the bottom a favour by destabilising Burnley to the extent that they'll probably now, sadly, crash out the Premier League. Because even if the president or chairman says we're all traumatised by this move, I think it is very, very significant and shows you just how much his departure will hurt the club.
Mm. I don't know about that. I mean, Owen Coyle, I'm not saying he's done a bad job, but I don't think he's irreplaceable.
All right. Nobody is, Barry. Just you remember that.
You are.
Yeah.
As many of your stand-ins have proven.
Yeah, indeed.
When is your skiing holiday this year?
Ooh.
Soon, coming up.
Can't be far away now. Don't know who's going to be stepping into my lodge. You've been angling for Charlotte Jackson, Barry.
Yeah.
All right. Man City, Blackburn, just to finish off, next Monday night, blah, blah, blah. Wait, what's Mancini up to with this brave project it is to spend all Abu Dhabi's money on reassembling his Panini album from the World Cup 1998 with Patrick Vieira and trying to get Veron in?
Strange signings.
Hmm.
Very, very odd. I mean, Veron has said he's not going to go, and I think that's a bullet that Mancini and Man City dodged there. But Vieira, very odd.
He quite possibly needs someone to shuffle from side to side, from one end of the centre circle to the other.
Hard not to look back to that night when he turned up at Highbury with Juventus and met a young Cesc Fabregas as some kind of a watershed in his in his career. And, fair enough, he might not rate the people who are there, but you've got to think there are some younger equivalents out there who Man City might be able to throw enormous sums of cash at and lure in. In the meantime, though, against a Blackburn team that hasn't won in eight games, Stats fans, what do you think? Will Mancini continue his no-goals-conceded record?
Oh, you're now asking us to
come
up with score lines.
No, I'm just saying, well, you know, they've done very impressively so far against not desperately tough opposition, and this fits into the same category, surely.
Yeah, I'd imagine they'd win, whether they win and concede or win and don't concede doesn't really matter.
Right, imagine asking you to pick the score. It's not the Guardian way, is it?
No.
Okay, good. Now, unbelievably and sadly, that is it for today's pod. And many, many thanks to you all there for listening to it. And you, producer Pete, for stitching it all together. Barry, John Ashdown, Raphael Honigstein, for being part of it. And we'll be back on Monday with plenty, let's hope, to talk about. So do join us then.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.